Jackson, W266, DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
I'm Ed Donahue with an AP News Minute. Sources tell the AP the head of Customs and Border Protection is being forced out of his job. The shakeup comes as Republicans are likely to take control of the House in January and were expected to launch investigations into the border. Here's the AP's Jackie Quinn.
Commissioner Chris Magnus has been on the job for less than a year, but he tells the Los Angeles Times he was told to resign or be fired. Customs and Border Protection's been criticized for its treatment of migrants and for the sharp spike in border crossings, up 37% over the year before, surpassing 2.3 million.
That number is more than twice the highest level during Donald Trump's presidency in 2019. The numbers reflect deteriorating economic and political conditions in more countries, relative strength of the U.S. economy, and uneven enforcement of asylum restrictions. I'm Ed Donahue.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Americans are applying for student loan forgiveness under the new Biden administration plan. In states like Wisconsin, borrowers will want to be aware of some potential tax implications. Mike Moen reports.
The Biden plan provides loan forgiveness of up to $10,000 for federal direct loans and up to $20,000 for Pell Grant recipients. Cheryl Rapp with Wisconsin's 529 College Savings Program says the relief amounts could be taxed in 13 states around the country, and Wisconsin is among them.
Congress expanded the federal student loan forgiveness tax exemption when it passed the American Rescue Plan last year, but that still means the state has opportunity, depending on their laws, to actually tax the money that was forgiven.
It's unclear yet if Wisconsin will join 37 other states in aligning its tax code with the federal government to allow for the exemption. Rep says not making any law changes could result in a borrower being taxed between $300 and $1,000 at the state level. Meanwhile, she says it's important to be on the lookout for scams during the application process.
There's scammers that might be out there of, hey, I can help you with a fee, forgive your loans, or consolidate your loans and all that stuff.
And Rapp says it's also important for future borrowers to still be mindful of predatory lenders.
Avoid those that are really high interest rates or have big additional costs.
And for both federal and private loans, she says never borrow the full amount you qualify for if you don't need it. And Rapp says savings programs like the one she works with can help avoid these problems if investments start early. For low-income households, other family members, such as a grandparent, can make contributions to keep the account growing. Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
And for Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell.
Who doesn't love laser tag? iCombat gives you that and so much more. It's a real-life video game experience. iCombat's perfect for birthday parties, special events, corporate team building, or just blasting away at your friends. iCombat at 1023 Spring City Drive off Sunset. For more info, go to iCombatWaukesha.com. iCombat is a proud sponsor of the Black Shirt Football radio broadcast. Gear up, squad up, prepare for iCombat laser tag.
WAUK will be broadcasting the Waukesha Christmas Parade live, and you can become a sponsor. Call us at 262-232-8164. Sponsorship includes an on-air interview during the live broadcast of the Christmas Parade. A portion of the proceeds goes directly to the Waukesha Memorial Fund. Please call at 262-232-8164. That's 262-232-8164.
Ready for our little forest adventure?
Yes!
There's a forest closer than you think. Find a park or forest near you and music inspired by nature at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by USDA Forest Service and the Ad Council.
I'm 54, so it's too late to start saving for retirement, right?
Not right. Starting to save, even in your 50s, can really make a difference. At aceyourretirement.org, in just 3 minutes, you'll get a free personalized retirement plan. That's aceyourretirement.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Neil Armstrong waited 6 hours and 39 minutes to step onto the surface of the moon.
Jackie Robinson waited 20 months to play his first game with the Brooklyn Dodgers. And even DiCaprio had to wait 22 years to win an Oscar. You can wait until your destination. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
My mother was always very active and independent, and she was familiar with her neighborhood. But one day, she stopped at the stop sign for much longer than usual. She wasn't even really sure where she was at.
It's important for you to talk to someone about it. I felt so much better after my son told me, "Mom, we'll figure it out."
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. Visit alz.org/ourstories to learn more. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Morning Cannolis with James Centel is an independent product and has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. Enjoy.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Centel.
You don't know me, but I'm your brother.
Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Centel.
Welcome to our second hour on this Saturday morning, November 19th. Glad to have you with us once again as we're chatting in this second hour about this major news story coming out yesterday. The Attorney General of the United States of America, Merrick Garland, announcing the appointment of Special Counsel Jack Smith to oversee these two major investigations that have been going on for a number of months, years arguably, involving the January 6th insurrection, the riot at the Capitol, and also the taking and the acquisition, the maintenance of the many documents by the former president at his location in Mar-a-Lago. Those two major criminal investigations being pursued right now and for a long period of time by the United States Department of Justice, now going to be overseen by Special Counsel Jack Smith. And right before the hour-long break here, we began to talk about the merits and, with all due respect, the demerits of this appointment. I want to reaffirm, as I give you some thoughts of my own on this, that it is a good thing that in America we can, in fact, talk about these things, raise the kinds of questions that Kurt just raised about the timing of this. And my view is about the messaging that it's sending the American public about the legitimacy of what the Department of Justice can and cannot do in the America of the 21st century. Let me back into that a little bit more. Once again, remind you of some of the things that Merrick Garland said before this happened, which was that he felt strongly, as do I and many other people, that the United States Department of Justice, admittedly, in the wake of a very difficult time under the Sessions and Barr leadership, a time when a public reputation and public status was not good, the decision by Attorney General Barr to misrepresent what the Mueller report said, interventions by the attorneys general in the prosecutions of Roger Stone and Michael Flynn and others out there, that probably the likely termination of investigations in the Southern District of New York involving the so-called catch and kill matter involving the former president and allegations that he may have had affairs in the past. Certainly representations by U.S. attorneys in Georgia in the Southern District of New York about bad interferences by the U.S. Department of Justice, by the Attorney General in investigations. All of that in the wake of the last 4 years or so of the previous administration, that is, I should say the last 6 years, including that four-year period of time. Merrick Garland comes in, and he plainly is a man of great reputation, great integrity, great skill, having served for a long period of time on the United States Court of Appeals. In a more perfect world, with better process at the Capitol Hill in our Congress, Merrick Garland would be Justice Garland today, and we know about that alternative history that probably should have happened. But he comes in, and he is appointed by our present president to respond to the concerns that the United States Department of Justice has been corrupted, if you will. Perhaps with a small c. to do all these kinds of things that are not in the apolitical, nonpartisan interests of the people of the United States of America. We have talked at great length on this program, other broadcasts, about the importance of this independence of the U.S. Department of Justice. And I can say that for 30 years as an assistant U.S. attorney, in my time here in eastern Wisconsin, in western Michigan, even in my appointments overseas and in Washington, D.C., working for Janet Reno, for Eric Holder, that notion of being apolitical and nonpartisan was the thing that we wore our badges most proudly about, presented ourselves as people who, regardless of our own internal, private, personal views about politics, did not wear them on our sleeves. And indeed, I can't remember a single time in my term as U.S. attorney or as an assistant U.S. attorney when issues related to prosecutions would be in any way focused upon partisan politics or what a particular party or even what the president might want or not want. It was all premised upon the rule of law, on justice, on what justice and the rule of law would require us to do. And so Merrick Garland brought in to restore this, and to that point, early on, up until yesterday, indicating that he felt strongly that these investigations could go ahead by reestablishing the integrity of the department, and that indeed its long-standing history to do just that could be the basis for these investigations without having us to establish a special counsel. And again, he comes forward yesterday with legitimacy and says that the decision by the former president to announce his candidacy, the likelihood that the present president will continue to at least attempt to serve in the White House, announcing his candidacy perhaps some point down the road, invokes this kind of extraordinary circumstances position. And I would offer simply this, that concern about in sending to the American public this notion that only a special counsel now can do this is frankly more language than reality. We know from the past history that I recited in our first hour that as a practical matter, Jack Smith is not an independent investigator of the sort that we have had in the past. He's not an independent counsel. He is going to be responsible to the Attorney General when it comes time to make decisions about prosecutions. Jack Smith is going to be obliged to go back to Lisa Monaco, go back to the Attorney General, and not only get their authorization, but also to do other things along the way to ensure that he is, again, working consistent with U.S. Department of Justice policy and practice. His staff, for what it's worth, is going to be that of the U.S. Department of Justice. The copy machines, the office supplies, those of the U.S. Department of Justice. Most importantly, salaries paid by the Department of Justice. And that is not to indicate that he will not have a bit more independence, but the reality is he is still a federal prosecutor. And so I think it's important for America to understand that. I am not being critical of that particular codification. What I am concerned about is that the message being sent to America is that as the Attorney General continues this very good, very important effort to restore the integrity and reputation of the U.S. Department of Justice, that we may implicitly, maybe not explicitly, but implicitly be sending the message to America that still, in this Department of Justice, we cannot do this. We cannot do this with fairness and with impartiality. And it's only by doing this and establishing a special counsel that seems to have this arm's length relationship with the Department of Justice, that's the only way that we can ensure that this is not only real in terms of its integrity, but also the perception of integrity is also preserved. I think this is an opportunity, or was an opportunity, for the Attorney General to continue with his first inclination, which is to say, you know what? The Department of Justice, U.S. attorneys, folks at Maine Justice, every single day make important decisions that are premised upon non-political decisions. They do that every single day across the country in U.S. attorneys' offices. We did that here in eastern Wisconsin, other places around the country. And we do that without any sort of political animation at all. To send the message today, even though he would be criticized for doing it, that can be done in this present circumstance without having to go to the not extraordinary measure. It's not that extraordinary, but establishing this special counsel would reaffirm for the American public that the Department of Justice is back. The Department of Justice can, in fact, do this kind of work. Mainline people doing this as they do every single day. Now, again, that is not in any way to indicate that Jack Smith is not an outstanding and wonderful contribution to this process. And he can and will, plainly, provide an awful lot of insight because of his experience, and his counsel will be highly valued. But the reality is that this kind of work is the kind of thing that Department of Justice does on a regular basis. Beyond that, there are a couple of other things that are significant here as well. We know that even in this very announcement, the relationship with the White House has been arm's length. Just yesterday, Karine Jean-Pierre, the White House press secretary, said that President Biden did not know that the attorney general was going to appoint the special counsel to handle these two major criminal investigations. She said he was not aware. We were not aware. We were not given any advance notice. Why is that important? That's important because it affirms that, you know what, the Department of Justice is back and is, in fact, establishing this arm's length relationship and will not have the imprimatur of Joe Biden or anyone else aside from the rule of law itself on its decisions as it goes forward. As another small footnote to all this, I note this past week that some of my former colleagues, a woman named Joyce Vance, who is a former U.S. attorney in Alabama in that same tenure when I was U.S. attorney, and five others have written a memorandum on the Mar-a-Lago matter, and it's basically a prosecution memorandum, about 150, 160 pages, setting forth in great detail what they would perceive to be the six charges that could be brought. What is the point of that? Well, the point of that is academically interesting, certainly. It is out there. You can read it. But it shows that, indeed, Department of Justice people, in this case former people, can do this work and can bring to the important task in front of them all of the experience and language and insight that they routinely have brought to other cases. And so I offer that simply as a perspective, not only because of the importance of Jack Smith's great involvement in this, but I offer that from a perspective about what he will be doing and what he will not be doing. We also know that, of course, the former president has already criticized this. He has said as late as yesterday, he's been going through this for 6 years, and I hope the Republicans have courage to fight this. I'm not going through it anymore, he says. The point of that, of course, that the criticism will come, regardless of how these investigations play out. Whoever makes a decision, it will ultimately be Merrick Garland still. And even with the good imprimatur of a Jack Smith, who will bring all of his expertise to this important task, the mere appointment of a special counsel is not going to stop people from criticizing. And I would offer again, with my humble perspective on the importance and the great tradition and my great love of the Department of Justice, that this is the kind of thing that the Department of Justice should now resume doing without the need to package this, if you will, inside the imprimatur and the surroundings of a special counsel appointment. Again, all of that, a part of our appropriate discussion in America about this. Again, probably a procedure that will not be slowed, but nonetheless, an understanding of the civics behind all of this, hugely important as we go ahead and understand what Jack Smith is going to be doing, perhaps leading up to the announcements down the road of criminal indictments in one or both of these matters. We've got lots and lots of folks on the line, and we're going to be taking those folks up just as we continue this discussion right after this break. So stay with me, Joe and Dick and Gene. We're going to be taking your phone calls on this very important issue right after this break here on Morning Cannolis.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then, you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which right. Was audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
Oh. We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
We have to really understand how critically important a time this is. Time for talk is over. The time for action is now. Because my voice has always been and will continue to be for people who don't have a voice.
Tune in to the Earl Ingram Show every Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Only on WAUK 540 AM, 101.1 FM, The Shaw.
Here's your updated forecast on The Shaw.
Chance of scattered snow showers this afternoon. Otherwise, cloudy skies. Highs level off around 24. Westerly winds 15 to 20 miles an hour. Chance for snow showers again tonight. Lows dip down to about 6 above. Partly cloudy. High temperatures reach up to 28. Tomorrow, a mix of clouds and sun. About an inch of snow today. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 19 degrees.
A progressive voice from Manitowoc to Janesville. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
Back. We are talking this morning about this major news story coming out of Washington, D.C. yesterday, the appointment by the Attorney General of Jack Smith to serve as a special counsel overseeing the January 6th investigation, also the investigation of the Mar-a-Lago documents. And I promised right before the break that we would take some of our wonderful callers calling in this morning, offering perhaps their views, their questions, their perspectives on this issue, perhaps others, and perhaps even responding to my thoughts on the significance of this news item and also the importance of understanding what it is and what it is not, and the possibility that the Department of Justice has within itself still the continuing capacity, renewed now under this Attorney General, to do this work absent the nomenclature of a special counsel. But we'll see what you all have to say about that. And Joe, we appreciate very much your calling in, your comments, your thoughts about my commentary, perhaps, and also other things we've talked about this morning.
First off, many thanks. It's been absolutely invaluable, your detail and your thoughts on even just telling us the difference between the independent prosecutor and the special prosecutor is just completely so valuable, and I really appreciate your perspective. I was interested in your thoughts on two particular points. I've heard some argue that because we don't know what's been going on with this investigation, but Ginni Thomas has been talked about. So I'd love your speculation on point number one. Was the special prosecutor brought in part because Mr. Merrick Garland was turned down, as did not get his nomination to the Supreme Court? If you have a special prosecutor Jack Smith and not Mr. Garland, then you can look at Ginni Thomas and the Supreme Court and the ties to Clarence Thomas and her ties to January 6th. With no conflict of interest, as you said, keeping things at an arm's length. So that would be the first element I'd love you to talk about. The second is, it's in a blog by a person who writes under the name of Empty Wheel. She writes a law reporter. She's very detailed, very smart. And she was saying that if you look at what Garland was talking about when he was talking about bringing forth this special prosecutor, it's important to remember he uses the words extraordinary circumstances. And it's, of course, I think all of us first go to Trump starting his campaign for, another run at president. But she remarks upon the fact that when the edict that they're supposed to be doing for this January 6th investigation is any person or entity that interfered with the transfer of power in the United States. Well, that can be more than Trump. I mean, he may not be the only or the sole or the head even of what this search may be if they're looking for an entity. And she brings up the point that there was a one of the House members, Scott Perry, head of the House Freedom Caucus. Okay, there is an entity. And if you start to look at the spider web of people that are in that that caucus, the Freedom Caucus, you get to a lot of people who have been seeking pardons. Matt Gaetz, Andy Biggs, Louie Gohmert, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Jim Jordan. So if you have a House that is now Republican and can set about to say, let's start defunding the Department of Justice, if some of those people are forced to leave because investigations or indictments start coming down their way, that gets it into an even hairier territory. And I know this is going to be a small point, but one commentator said, well, Jack Smith has a great deal of experience in the debate and speech clause that affects Congress. So I thought, you know, the spider web gets bigger and more involved, but I'd love to hear your comments on these items, and I really appreciate your commentary. Thanks so much, Jim.
Joe, always appreciate your calling in, and great questions once again. I'm going to take the second one first, because yes, plainly, these investigations going on to this point, especially with respect to January 6th, arguably about Mar-a-Lago as well, they are broad. They are very, very broad. We know that from some of the appearances already made before the grand juries pending in Washington, D.C. What you've described, this web, this extending tendrils of people inside the Freedom Caucus, other folks on Capitol Hill, all of that, plainly a part of this investigation. And again, to your point about Jack Smith and his familiarity, great thing to have him involved, and wonderful to have him inside the Department of Justice, important to have that expertise, a huge, huge, significant, important decision in terms of prosecuting because of where this may go and where those tendrils may lead. My small footnote is simply, you can do that by employing him as a Department of Justice supervisor in the criminal division, other places, without having to announce this as a special counsel, and really engage, if you will, someone in the fictitious belief that he is going to be truly independent. Because he still, as I said before, does need to get, not only comply with all the Department of Justice rules and regulations, which he has done so well in the past, but is also ultimately, when it comes to prosecutions of people well beyond President Trump and others, he's got to get a review and approval by the Attorney General himself. And so I'm wondering out loud if, again, the nomenclature on this is conveying to the American public something that really is not true in practice. And it's a small point. It's a small point. But the larger one, I think, is what you've just made about the importance of his expertise that he brings to this. The other piece of this, which seems to go perhaps in the opposite direction, that is, extraordinary circumstances. Absolutely. This notion that the focus, especially on January 6th, as we know, does involve Ginni Thomas. Not only things that she has done nationwide, we've talked about the Arizona connections in the past. She has appeared before the January 6th committee, which we know too, not a part of the investigation formally. All of that. And the past, obviously, the nomination of the present Attorney General to a position on the Supreme Court could prompt an awful lot of people to say, gee, good to have at least some a little bit further arm's length, even if Jack Smith is still really inside the Department of Justice as special counsel. So all good points. We don't know where this will go. Plainly substantively, again, should not be dramatically slowed down by his appointment and presumably going forward. The other comment that I would make, of course, is that there is some time urgency to all of this. And it goes to Kurt's comment before the break here as well, which is that if you're going to prosecute, and we don't know what the future is going to bring politically, but probably you need to do that in the next couple of years or so and bring all that prosecution to conclusion, a lot on Jack Smith's plate and the plate of all the other people inside Department of Justice who've continued to work on these issues. We're going to continue with this discussion, take more phone callers right after this break here on Morning Cannolis.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk from Butler to Windlake. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
This local musical interlude is brought to you by Max Inc. Radio. Dana Perry.
What am I fearing? Why do I worry?
Listen to Max Inc. Radio every Saturday and Sunday, 6 p.m. to midnight. Download the podcast at maxincradio.com. We are local music.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which was audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
AP News. I'm Ed Donahue. President Biden says the U.S. is keeping its commitment to fight climate change and urged other countries to do the same.
At the UN's COP27 summit in the Egyptian resort town of Sharm el-Sheikh,
the climate crisis is about human security.
President Biden says the U.S. investment in green energy pays off in several ways.
We're proving that good climate policy is good economic policy.
He's announced a new regulation to crack down on methane emissions, considered worse than carbon, and renewed the U.S. commitment to cut greenhouse gases in half by 2030.
We can no longer plead ignorance to the consequences of our actions or continue to repeat our mistakes.
The U.S. has invested some $375 billion over a decade to fight climate change. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
With the president in Egypt on Veterans Day, Vice President Kamala Harris laid a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknowns at Arlington National Cemetery. She said the military represents the best of America.
Unwavering courage, unmatched talent, and unshakable devotion. You come from every corner of our country, and out of many, you become one.
Sources tell the AP with a high level of illegal border crossings, the head of Customs and Border Protection, Chris Magnus, has been told to resign and told the Los Angeles Times he will not step down. A survey by AP Votecast shows support for abortion rights drove women to the polls Tuesday. As for many, the issue took on higher meaning, in part because of an overreaching concern about the future of democracy. Voters in Colorado passed a ballot initiative to decriminalize psychedelic mushrooms for people 21 and older, and to create state-regulated healing centers where people can experience the drug under supervision. I'm Ed Donahue, AP News.
My husband said to give our house more curb appeal, so I started painting. Then I went on Google and looked up the meaning of curb appeal. It said to make it more nicer. So I called Replacement Window Center, and they put in new replacement windows.
Get free installation and 0% financing for 18 months. Free installation and 0% financing. Hurry, call now.
Replacement Window Center. Our name says it all.
Catch Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow at its brand new time, 6 to 8 a.m. weekdays.
The city of Shanghai started administering an inhalable COVID-19 vaccine. I hear a lot of you saying the same thing I had in my head. I don't know about that.
As long as they're not just crop dusting everyone.
Crop dusting, that's exactly what I think people would be fearful of. I would not trust the Chinese government. I would trust people who really know about inhaling something and the good that it does you. Of course, I'm talking...
And we're back. We're talking this morning in our remaining minutes, our remaining half hour here in Morning Cannolis, about this very important decision announced by the Attorney General just yesterday afternoon to appoint Jack Smith as a special counsel now to oversee and respond to the Attorney General in the future with respect to the investigations of the Mar-a-Lago documents matter and also the January 6th investigation of the insurrection of that day. We've got a couple more callers calling in to offer perspectives and questions, views on this and perhaps other topics. Thank you so much for calling in. Dick from Madison, appreciate your time this morning.
Actually, Joe asked the question I was going to ask, so that's already answered. But
all right, good.
To Trump and the Trump supporters in the Republican Party that are going to cry about this, who cares? First of all, if he would have reappointed William Barr to this position, they would have cried about that. Even though, you know, he used the office of Attorney General, he always had the perspective, in my mind, Trump, that was his personal attorney. But that's another story. Right. My personal view on this, I didn't like anything about the way it went down yesterday. I had an argument with my older brother about it.
Okay.
And I said, you know, to me, it's more than a punt. It's like you're first and goal at the 1 yard line and you call in the field goal unit. To me, it was a slam dunk. You go for it. Because time is of the essence.
Dick, I appreciate that thought. It really does animate a lot of my thoughts. My initial reaction was the same here as well. Again, reaffirming, as I've done multiple times this morning, Jack Smith is going to be terrific. And so part of my rhetorical question is, why not bring him in as part of the Department of Justice 18 months ago or even 2 years ago to oversee this? He will add a lot going forward and, yes, animate the wisdom and legitimacy of that decision. My small objection to this, once again, is that it does seem to be the kind of thing that especially in the wake of the election about 10 days or so ago, when we learned that America, that most of the population does in fact understand things, they appreciate things, we can speak with the American public with intelligence and explain to them that we're bringing Jack Smith in because we're reaching that goal line, if you will, as you've just identified it. We need his expertise. I don't know we need to do this as a special counsel just because it conveys the notion once again, that somehow the Department of Justice may not be up for the task. And again, a little bit of disingenuity there just because it is the Department of Justice that ultimately makes this decision. So I concur in your perspective, if not in your dispute with your brother, but I'll leave you to manage that down the road. But very much appreciate the call and the insight as well, which is consistent, I think, with my views on this as well. Gene from Eau Claire, you're also calling this morning. Always appreciate your comment or question.
I understand where everybody's coming from here, but I'm going to offer a different perspective.
Good. All right.
One
go ahead.
I watched every single one of those House representatives every time when the Republicans were in charge, just demonstrative, never working on anything, blame, 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 blame. I would like to offer the idea that maybe this is the path of least objections, of least obstruction, because they will be hammering all the time on our Attorney General. This guy has not been involved. He's a new face. He will not have all the answers. They will not be bringing him in all the time. They will not be hammering home, and he will have a path to figure out what's going on, the best way to get this done, without all of the obstructionism that they are so well noted for. When I saw they won, the first thing I thought of, oh my God, we're in trouble. Because they're deceptive, they're involved in it, and they are going to obstruct no matter what way they can by the new face, the new leader. Our current Attorney General will have to face these people, go in every time they want them, and this way, this guy can get the job done. They have the evidence. They can get her done. And all those involved will have to testify and have to be held accountable without having to answer to these, traitors, in my opinion. Right. That's just my opinion. I think that gives them a better path. I really
sure
do.
Gene, and I appreciate and value very much that perspective. And you know what? It's legitimate, and it's very, very well thought out. And indeed, getting back to Jack Smith, you know, he is the kind of guy, he has been apolitical. No one knows actually even what his political affiliation has been, nor do we need to know that. Certainly, the Attorney General and he will continue to be on the firing line, if you will, not literally, but on the oral and perhaps even written firing line for doing this work. We've seen that already, as you have, Gene, as well. The folks you've described as obstructionists, that doesn't mean you can't go ahead with these investigations. Your point exceptionally well taken. And again, that's what our discussion is all about. Hoping again that the American public embraces that sort of thing. That is where ultimately, regardless of how you come down on this particular issue, and I don't know that it's a really incredibly controversial issue. For those of us who are interested in the rule of law, like you and others, it is intended ultimately to move this ball forward, to hopefully get some decision-making done fairly quickly and do it with great integrity. And that really is my larger point, which is the Department of Justice needs to be focused on all those kinds of things to send to the American public this notion that not only is it back after 4 years in the prior administration of some taint on its reputation and its credibility, Mississippi, but the Department of Justice can do this. And the criticisms will come, as you just said, Gene, need to go ahead, even so, in the midst of that, and pursue these all-important investigations. We will continue plainly to monitor all of this. We have certainly not heard the last of Jack Smith. My suspicion is that although he's going to be quiet in doing his grand jury work and otherwise overseeing all of this, he certainly will continue to be a person in the news, as will the Attorney General, the Deputy Attorney General, and other people ultimately responsible for the investigation and prosecution of these matters. And so thank you so much for all your comments, your questions. That's what America is all about, discussion and good discourse, informed and understood, even as we engage in that kind of important and productive conversation. Let's talk about a couple of other things going on in the courts of America, which I promised at the start of our tour up here this morning. One of those having to do with the seditious conspiracy trial that continues also in Washington, D.C., right down the street from Main Justice. We know that the Oath Keepers, and in particular this fellow named Stuart Rhodes and four other people, on trial for seditious conspiracy, continuing this past week, which also saw the testimony this week of a woman named Jessica Watkins. She's a member of that far-right Oath Keepers organization. She took the stand this past week to defend herself against the accusation of seditious conspiracy. Along the way, she engaged in sort of an outburst in the court about the 2020 election. She said that half this country feels the way I did. Half the country feels disenfranchised by this election. We didn't have a free and fair election. With respect to her involvement in the alleged seditious conspiracy, she did testify that she was becoming increasingly paranoid about the public's public health restrictions in the midst of the pandemic. She was watching 5 or 6 hours, she said, of conspiracy theorist Alex Jones' InfoWars every day. She did testify. She testified that she believed now that it was, in her words, really stupid to go inside the Capitol. She testified that she got swept up in the chaos of that day and compared it to Black Friday and the Black Friday sale. She described herself as being just another idiot. Importantly, when she was on cross-examination then after her testimony in her defense, the assistant U.S. attorney confronted her about many things, including this statement that she made, that is that Watkins herself made, that she was unaware of any violence on January 6th, other than that defendants had made some similar statements and that they didn't know about the mob until it was later in the news. The assistant U.S. attorney confronted Watkins on that, confronted her also about the Black Friday comparison, saying that, you know, the assault on the Capitol is not like a Black Friday sale. And again, a conversation that gets to the heart of this issue about seditious conspiracy. The other defendants, Rhodes himself, Stuart Rhodes, previously testified. Thomas Caldwell also testified in the trial. Both sort of struggled on cross-examination. The other two, this woman named Kelly Meggs and Kenneth Harrelson, did not take the stand. Thomas Caldwell, during the course of his testimony, claimed that a message he wrote about ferrying weapons across the Potomac River was just creative writing. He wasn't serious about any of that, and it was a snippet from a screenplay that he was writing at the time. So interesting testimony. That case plainly going to the jury sometime soon. We will also be continuing to monitor that, even as the January 6th larger investigation goes on under Jack Smith. This kind of thing continues, as the Attorney General said, not only with respect to Oath Keepers, but also the Proud Boys. That trial coming up fairly soon. And again, nearly 900, maybe even excess now of 900 people also prosecuted for their on-the-ground involvement in the riot on January 6th. That not a part of the special counsel's assignment, but nonetheless out there. The other major case, again, in trial this past week, we have talked a lot about it, is this case involving the Trump corporations. This time, a criminal case down the street in a New York court, a criminal court in which Alan Weisselberg, the chief financial officer, testifying this past week about his involvement with the corporation. You recall well that the district attorney has sued criminally the Trump corporation and the Trump
payroll corporation, those two companies, for this a secret kind of off-the-books payments scheme, free apartments and cars, other perks to employees and other Trump executives, basically maintaining two sets of books, evading taxes for them and others. And so that trial had been going on for a long period of time. Alan Weisselberg, again, is the chief financial officer, an important player in this because the law requires in the state of New York, and frankly in any state in which there is the prosecution of a corporation, that the government show that there were these tax-free payments, whatever the nature of the criminal conduct is, was improperly directed by a high-ranking executive in the corporation that's on trial. That executive has got to be somebody who's responsible for major decisions inside these companies, and that those decisions were carried out on behalf of those companies. And certainly Alan Weisselberg has testified to that end. He has said that the things that he did, he's taken responsibility for his own conduct, and also said that he acted on behalf of the corporations in doing these tax-related crimes. And so to the extent that the prosecution has that burden, it's pretty much been shown by his testimony. At the same time, that is not to say that the Weisselberg testimony is completely compelling. Plainly, Alan Weisselberg this past week and presumably in the future has not pointed any fingers at the Trumps themselves, including Donald Trump. He, on cross-examination, made it very clear that he did this on his own. During the course of cross-examination, again, on behalf of attorneys for the corporation, was asked this question: did you honor the trust that was placed in you? And Weisselberg conceded that he did not. And the question came back then, and you did it for your own personal gain, the defense lawyer said. And Weisselberg says, yes. Weisselberg goes on to say that, yes, I was embarrassed by what I did, more than you can imagine. And so a lot of this case is going to turn on the credibility of Weisselberg as this key player in the prosecution presented by the New York criminal prosecutors. We also know that Alan Weisselberg had previously pled guilty to 15 criminal charges in this very case. And in response to that, in connection with that arrangement, his testimony in this trial in exchange for what is plainly a more lenient sentence, likely anticipating about 100 days in jail instead of the maximum 15-year prison term he faced. All that to say is that the jury is plainly watching all this and looking at all this and not only figuring out what the Trump Corporation, through the CFO, understood and did not understand, how he was acting on behalf of the corporation, but also determining the credibility of Alan Weisselberg. Is this someone who's taking the stand and identifying his involvement and the involvement of others based upon the deal that he has gotten to testify in this way? What about his decision not to point fingers at other people, including his bosses, who might also have been involved in this? That also a matter of credibility for the jury to decide as this matter goes forward. Alan Weisselberg also maintaining during the course of the trial and saying that he is still in the employ of the corporations, even during the course of this trial. So interesting to watch that down the road as well. Come back for our last moments here on Morning Cannolis. We're going to chat about the Supreme Court in our remaining minutes. Come back for that discussion and more.
So all you folks out there, if you haven't registered to vote, register to vote. Get ready to vote. There are so many things on the ballot this November, and our freedom, our liberty, and our way of life. But we'll get to all of that this evening.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m. on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ed Council and Pivotal Ventures.
Veterans, whatever you're going through, don't wait. Reach out. Find resources at va.gov/reach. That's va.gov/reach.
Brought to you by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs and the Ad Council.
Text and work. Text and pretend to work. Text and act surprised when someone calls you out for not working.
Who, me?
Text and whatever. Just don't text and drive. Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Here's today's STEM tip. Don't throw out that old plastic bottle. Repurpose it by turning it into an awesome terrarium. Just fill it with sand, pebbles, soil, and your favorite plant. It'll grow sealed right in its own ecosystem. Learn more at SheCanSTEM. A message from the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Chance for scattered snow showers this afternoon. Otherwise, overcast. Highs level off around 24. Winds out of the west, 15 to 20 miles an hour. Chance of snow showers tonight. Lows dip down to about 6 above. Partly cloudy skies. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times again tomorrow. 28. About an inch of snow today. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 19 degrees.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM. Wisconsin's home for rational talk radio.
And we're back for our final minutes here on Morning Cannolis. Thank you again for joining me. Appreciate great phone calls, great comments, great conversation already about this major issue coming out of Washington, D.C. this past week, just yesterday, involving special counsel appointments by the Attorney General of the United States of America. In our last moments together here this morning on Saturday, November 19th, we're going to go back to the Supreme Court. We have spent a lot of time in previous shows talking about these major cases. Now about 40 altogether on the present term, the 2022-2023 term of the United States Supreme Court. Cases being argued these days in front of the United States Supreme Court. A few reminders about what's coming up. Tuesday, November 29th, this case, United States versus Texas. It's a major case involving the authority of the Secretary of Homeland Security to make decisions about enforcement priorities when it comes to immigration, deportations, investigations. How far does the authority of the Homeland Security Secretary go? Can only the Congress designate those kinds of things, or does the commission of the responsibility to a secretary to do this kind of work carry with it the discretionary decision to make judgment calls about priorities when it comes to enforcement of our laws on the southwest border and in other places across our country? That's Tuesday, November 29th. Monday, December 5th, not too long from now, this major case called 303 Creative versus Alanis coming out of Colorado. It has to do with whether or not LGBT rights to engage in commercial transactions with businesses asserting their First Amendment right to oppose same-sex marriages. How does the Supreme Court come down on that issue? Maintaining, again, this balance, if you will, between First Amendment rights, religious rights, freedom of speech rights, but also the rights of the LGBT community with respect to same-sex marriages and other issues, ensuring that there's not discrimination based upon sexual orientation, gender identity. How do you balance those two? And how do you come out when it comes to the commercial setting where businesses are engaging with each other? And in particular, out of Colorado, this particular business providing or not providing services to a same-sex couple. That coming up on Monday, December 5th. And finally, Wednesday, December 7th, what I've described as the single most important case of all, as Moore versus Harper, questioning whether or not there is legitimacy to this independent state legislature doctrine, the jurisdiction of state courts to decide contested election cases, including federal polling and vote counting challenges. How's the Supreme Court going to come down on that huge case, not only for the present, but arguably for 2024 and beyond, could change the ways in which we make decisions about voting in America. So keep all those on your calendars. And finally, today, I want to talk about yet another case that has been on the docket fairly recently. Early October, the Supreme Court said it's going to take up a case called Gonzalez versus Google. Yes, it is that Google of Google under Section 230 of the federal law. It's a 1996 provision. It was aimed basically at fostering the development of the internet and avoiding what's sometimes called kind of a chilling effect on speech. It grants internet platforms very broad immunity against liability for content
that's published by others. That's a very significant point. And as the capabilities and, as we know, the functionalities, if you will, of Internet services go further afield, if you will, from what could have been imagined at the time that the Internet was first developed, the Supreme Court's determination in this case is going to figure out whether or not, in this case, once again called Gonzalez versus Google, what does that mean? Are the platforms going to be retooled to somehow address immunity issues under Section 230? How does this particular case come before the United States Supreme Court? Again, that challenges, in many ways, the lifeblood, if you will, of places that operate on the World Wide Web, like Google and also Twitter. At the center of this case is a family of a woman named Naomi Gonzalez. She was a 23-year-old student. She was killed in a 2015 ISIS attack in Paris. You may recall those horrific events of 2015. This particular litigation, pending in the United States, charges Google that they participated in terrorist recruitment and promotion. How has that happened? By hosting videos that were created by ISIS and putting those on the Google platform. And the allegation, the complaint is that algorithmically recommending terrorist content to users who would be interested in viewing it, basically brainwashing them into believing these things about the world, placing paid advertisements in proximity to these ISIS-created content pieces, and splitting the resulting ad revenues with ISIS. All of that, those are the allegations, all of those things against to Google. So the allegations, again, coming from the family of this young woman tragically killed in Paris, assigning blame to Google for hosting these platforms, putting together the algorithms that permit ISIS to set forth on those platforms these various videos that plainly prompt people to engage in these kinds of terrorist activities. The plaintiffs filed this lawsuit under something called the Anti-Terrorism Act, the ATA. They allege, once again, that the defendants here, Google and others, are liable for committing, yes, they said it, acts of international terrorism, and as a secondary matter, they're liable for conspiring with and aiding and abetting ISIS's acts of international terrorism. Very strong charges. And the question, once again, is what about this Section 230, this 1996 provision? Is that legitimate? Is the shield provided for the Google entities and others like them, is that legitimate? The fact that Congress put this in place, does Congress need to revisit this issue and say, you know what? We are concerned about the fact that by providing this liability coverage, this shield, if you will, these kinds of things can happen. ISIS can take advantage of these platforms and ultimately perhaps result in deaths of people. If in fact indirectly, but nonetheless straight line from one to the other, from these platform presentations to something of the sort that happened in France way back in 2015. A very significant case coming up in a lower court that the Supreme Court is now reviewing. One of the majority judges said this: in sum, though we agree that the Internet has grown into a sophisticated and powerful global engine, The drafters of Section 230 could not have foreseen this. The decision which we reach is dictated by the fact that we are not writing on a blank slate. They went on to say Congress affirmatively immunized interactive computer service providers that publish the speech or content of others. Again, supporting 230 and continuing, at least at the lower courts, to enforce this notion that under Section 230, that platforms like Google and others would be protected from liability, the kinds of suits that are now being brought forth. One of the dissenters in that case said that I do not believe that Section 230 wholly immunizes a social media company's role as a channel of communication for terrorists in their recruiting campaigns and as an intensifier of the violent and hatred-filled messages they convey. So strong words coming from the lower courts. That case now before the United States Supreme Court, along with many other cases in the future. Thank you so much for joining me once again for this broad-based across America discussion today of what's in the courts and coming into your broadcast areas every single Saturday morning here on Morning Cannolis. Have a good week, everybody. A good Thanksgiving.
Hi, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out, because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes, good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container, because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha, 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 ha.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.